Welcome back to the Biz World Channel, the NBC Network, and the Job Market Channel. So we're going to be touching on quite a bit with my guest, and she will write, you know, us into a world of HR and you know, human resources. Yes, that's what I'm referring to, HR as we know it. But you know, we'll get closer to this department and what it does and how it operates, and the different things and intricate new stuff that, you know, it's really a vital department in any employer, you know, environment space. And you know, with me I have Chrissy Myers, who's the author of Reluctantly Resilient. She's also the CEO of AUI and Clarity HR, which provides insurance benefits and HR services to small and medium-sized businesses. So, you know, she's the expert here, and I mean it. And her description of her journey is going to give us, you know, more and get us closer to her expertise and experience as well. So without any further ado, Chrissy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Hurricane H. I am so glad to be here and get to share with your listeners today. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, no, it's as I was talking to you, it's a privilege and an honor, because in my world, I've dealt with HR for years. I mean, I've been employed, you know, since, you know, college, and that's a long time ago. But I can say, you know, in a majority, besides being an employee, and you always be an employee. I mean, I also have been, you know, owned businesses, so I have that side of the game. But really, there's a lot of different things that happen, and HR is a vital and really primary department that operates in any environment when it comes to business in general. So if you have business, it's a good chance you're going to need some HR staff level, and some are small scale, some are larger scale, and there's different components in there. So before we get into that real deep dive, let's talk about your journey into really becoming the CEO of two companies. You also, I didn't mention this, you do a lot of philanthropic work and community work. Yes. And we can talk about that, because I think that's a great, you know, way of giving back to the communities, and you love that work as well. And then ultimately your book, you know, again, Reluctantly Resilient, that's a powerful title to it. So let's talk to your journey and how you got into this world and why HR actually.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in a family business. So AUI is a third generation family business originally founded by my grandmother. My grandfather was a pastor. And so my grandmother needed a way to help pay the bills. So she partnered with someone, became an insurance agent. My dad bought her out and retired her so she could just be a pastor's wife. And then he married my mom and they worked on the business together. And then I came along and it was, if you want a car, you'll work for us. If you want us to pay for college, you'll work for us. And I wanted those things. So I, of course, did the work in the business. And then when I graduated with my master's, my dad said, so are you going to still work for us? And I was like, no, I'm not. You've given me every crappy job on the planet. I hate insurance. I've had to call dead people. I've had to walk around our conference room a million times to fill candy boxes. I want nothing to do with this organization. And he said, well, will you give me 6 months? And I said, no, I will give you 6 weeks because I'm looking for a job. And in those 6 weeks, he gave me everything that I wanted. So I never left. So continued to grow the business with him. He passed away in 2016. I took a step forward and then kind of arm wrestled a little bit with my mother for the business. That's part of the book, Reluctantly Resilient. And then I purchased the business from her in 2019 and then promptly started Clarity HR, which is small business HR for individuals or companies that do not have, do not want, or do not need a full-time HR person. Because something that I realized in business is that small business owners are often terrified of their people. And they're even more terrified of HR people, because as business owners, we're excited about the work that we do, but we're not always excited about the HR piece because we can get a little bit afraid of the rules and the regulations and the things that we don't know. So if we get in an awkward relationship with an HR person, we might not know how to fire them. And so they know more than we do. So we tend to be a little bit terrified. So started Clarity HR to kind of make HR less scary for myself. And we've continued to scale and grow. I wrote Reluctantly Resilient between 2020 and 2022 as I was kind of walking through my journey with COVID, at the same time walking through all of the things that happened in transitioning a family business. And then I had a personal tsunami and a professional tsunami happen about the same time in 2013. So we talk about the steps to resilience and the three things that you need to be a resilient business owner and resilient person, and one of which is philanthropy. And so I talk about philanthropy in your business and making philanthropy something that can be central to you and your team, and how it can be beneficial as you continue to grow on your business journey. So that's a little bit about me.
That's quite a bit. That's years of a lot of things, you know, and all good stuff. Yeah. And also thank you. I mean, you've crammed that in literally 60 seconds or so. So that's pretty good. That's like the elevator pitch at best. At its
Thank
best,
you.
like you covered it all. But we have the hour, so we're gonna have to expand on
Yes.
that. But so first things first. I mean, it's funny you mentioned insurance because that's the world I've been in. When I mentioned I've been in the corporate world in general, my journey started with hospitality, but then it quickly turned into insurance and government programs and all the stuff that you can put under the, I guess, the government HMO
Yes.
kind of concept, obviously in the sales and business development operations side, but either way, I mean, it is an employment, where that especially the sales division is usually a big department because we have a lot of, folks in there, and there's different components in there. Depends on how you look at it, what company you're in. And I love what you said, that there, and we can spend some time on that one. The idea of a small business person who cannot really who loves to start a business, but then they have to deal with HR components that they may not be experts at. And many small business owners, they don't have maybe a business education or even just the idea of like what the law, the employment law and stuff like that, and labor law really can be very difficult and tricky. And if you don't know how to navigate it, and again, and we live in a social media world today where there's a lot of feed from, lawyers and companies and so on and so forth. And there's different angles, and they're all good angles, and they all kind of have their own, I guess, targeting, messaging. But today, hopefully, we can, kind of bring all those things in the picture so people can understand that there is, both sides of the fence. There's some good stuff going on here, and there's some good stuff going on there. And in between could be a lot of bad things. And
Yes.
HR can be very devastating in terms of the not the HR itself, but the components of HR. And just, I mean, simple thing, I mean, you got leave of absence, for example, could be a big component, big discussion, right? Wrongful termination, harassments, you have discrimination. Those are the big ones, right? You have, the expectations of employers versus employees. You have performance versus not, you have union versus non-union. So there's
Yep.
quite a bit there. And these are all things, to be honest with you, I've dealt with all of it. And I've been from, as I mentioned to you, from an administrative judge, presence, where we deal with a case, to, sanctions, and even being subpoenaed into the state
Yeah.
and the federal, district, to actually be drilled by literally the DAs, for
Oh,
like
dear.
hours, and I had nothing to do with the whole thing, but because when I was under the company, I was under protection, but when I moved to a different company, I was, basically available and open, and they had to. I mean, I had no choice either. Well, come in, myself and just, answer questions or be subpoenaed, and either way you have to do it. So so I've experienced a lot of these things and how the protocols are, and you get preservation order, the company can do things. And I've seen companies being shut down, especially
Yeah.
in the world I'm in, there's a lot of federal funds. So obviously we're state and federal, programs. So therefore there's a lot of scrutiny from the local state Department of Health to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And so, and in and Department of Insurance, all the stuff is there. I've also dealt with investigations because, there's license, insurance license involved. And in our cases of, compliance violations, you have to deal with all this stuff. Yeah, we've had also the shady, guys that kind of play the system in between as employees.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm a big worker, supportive of employment and giving people opportunity, but also have a big, rule about law and law enforcement when it comes to policy and compliance. Because I think when you have a company, it doesn't matter if it's yours or you work for a company, there are laws that you have to, and when someone breaks some of the rules, it can impact the whole company. And
Yes.
I've seen that happen where a couple of people do bad things and an industry or a whole company shuts down. A lot of innocent people really get, shoved because now the company is losing a lot of money for the violations and they have to pay. And so therefore now they cut budget. That means layoffs. And I was in a company where 400 people got, clipped in one day. And, that's a big thing. And you attend, and I've been part of some of those discussions and also been part of the people that were actually given opportunities or options, So I can tell you, it's very difficult. So let's talk about that whole journey of HR and also the components of HR. Because a lot of people may think HR is just what I talked about, employment, but it's really the different components because there's a lot of divisions within HR. So let's break that down to our audiences, if you don't mind.
Okay, so there's a lot of different buckets, like you said, that we can put HR into. There is the compliance bucket, which is, are we following the right rules and regulations? And some of those things are Department of Labor led, so making sure that we're following federal guidelines. But some of it is also OSHA, occupational safety. I mean, there is an extension arm of human resources that deals with making sure that we are taking care of the employee and ensuring their safety. That's something that's extremely important, especially depending on the type of organization that you're in. So I would say that one thing that HR is important for is maintaining the life cycle of the employee. So from the time that someone is hired to the time that they may exit, either because they self-select out, they find another job, they retire, or maybe they're terminated, it's important that HR is there to kind of guide them through those steps. Now, oftentimes is human resources there to protect the employer? Absolutely. But there are also times where they're there to protect the employee, especially when we're talking about harassment, anti-discrimination, all the things that can be important, ensuring that someone gets hired. And then at the same time, if they're a whistleblower or they have reporting or there's something in the organization where they're concerned about, they need to talk to leadership or they need to talk about leadership, it's really important that HR is that sounding board and that employees feel comfortable being able to come to HR with any issues or concerns that they may have. So HR kind of has to stand in the middle between the employer and the employee and maintain that confidentiality, that confidence for both sides. Now, at the end of the day, is the HR person probably going to be a little bit more towards the employer side and protect the company? Yes, that's what they're hired to do. But there are absolutely times, Hurricane, where they come in and are really important in taking care of the employee. The other part is, life happens to everyone. So human resources is often there to help take care of the employee when something comes up that may either prevent them from being at work or may impact their job performance. So it's really important as we're kind of walking through the life cycle of the employee, people get married, they have babies, they lose spouses, they lose children. Things can happen that are great, and then things can also happen that are devastating. And human resources is there to kind of maintain the relationship and shepherd the employee in the direction that they need to go to kind of take care of the employee and build engagement. At the same time, human resources is there to find, attract, and retain people. So recruiting, bringing new people into the organization can be a significant component to HR, making sure that you're finding the right type of people, the right people in the right seats in the organization can drive an organization forward. At the same time, you pick the wrong people and it can devastate your organization, can be extremely costly. So finding the right people is really important. So recruiting is a big deal. At the same time, working with finance to ensure that we are paying people appropriately, where they're getting paid for the type of work, that we're competitive with the market, especially as small businesses. We're competing with the Amazons and the Googles of the world. So it's really important that we can create attractive and competitive packages to make sure that we have employees that want to stay within the organization. At the same time, building development and training tracks. HR can be a significant player in that space, helping the rest of the organization know, how do we effectively train employees? What can we do to keep them engaged so that they continue to grow? Because when you lose a significant employee, it can cost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace them. So human resources is in the litigation mitigation space, making sure that everyone's following the right rules and regulations, that the business is behaving appropriately. At the same time, they're also in the growth space, encouraging the organization to continue to grow, finding the right type of people to continue to manage and lead. Something else that HR often is a sounding board in enabling and empowering managers to make effective decisions around their people. Oftentimes, it's HR that identifies, hey, that manager needs some additional training and coaching and leadership development to make them a better leader. So HR sits in a lot of seats in a lot of areas. Oftentimes, HR gets thrown in the finance bucket where they look at, like, well, people are just payroll. That's not true. People do a lot of different things. So making sure that HR has a good communication level with upper level management, I feel like human resources or chief of people should always be occupying or have the ear of the CEO or the top executive in an organization, because it's really important that they're able to work together, because HR will make sure that an organization continues to become effective and efficient and kind of move forward. At the same time, they're paying attention to different rules and regulations, changing regulations. If you're a multi-state organization, I'm going to give you a word of wisdom. California is not the same as Texas. And if you have employees in both of those states, they have very different rules and regulations. So making sure that you're following everything appropriately, ensuring that your contract workers, those 1099s versus those W-2s, you're following all the right policies and procedures and making sure that you're checking all of the right boxes at the state level, the local level, and then of course at the federal government level. So I feel like HR occupies a ton of different spaces. We tend to be the counselors of the group too, saying if anybody has an issue that they need to work through, we tend to be the sounding board. So you have a lot of confidentiality that you have to build in relationships and kind of making sure you're maintaining records and at the same time building relationships. And especially for small businesses, if they only have a few employees or a few key employees or they're starting to scale, HR can be instrumental in continuing to help them build and grow along the way. So I think I kind of went in a bunch of different directions. That might at least give you a little bit of a summary as to kind of what I think HR is.
No, trust me, that's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty comprehensive in terms of like the spectrum and the different components. And and you've touched on a lot of good, great things, there that people should pay attention if they watch and listen. Again, whether you're in business for yourself or you work for a company, I think what you mentioned is very important for people to listen to because, sometimes people don't understand all these these parts of the job. And again, I've dealt with HR long enough and in different ways from again from recruiting to termination to policy to all the stuff and to problems when you have issues in terms of health or whatever. People have different things in their lives, so all these things are real. And they, I mean, listen, human resources, right? As this name sounds, it's really helping the resources of the humans that are operating in the business, from the top to the bottom, right? And by the way, when I said top and bottom here, there's no judgment in terms of the title and choice, and it's more about just the hierarchy. But it doesn't matter what level you're in a company, everybody should be, equal in terms of their treatment or whatever that is. Now, I know that historically that's always been a problem, and HR has always been the party that may be able to take some action. Because as a regular entry level or mid-level, employee, you might not have the power and stuff maybe to go against somebody that's a hierarchy, up above. But certainly through HR, you can have things. And you said, like if you feel harassment, if you feel discrimination, anything that is not fair in terms of, the labor law and, all that stuff can be, escaping someone unless they reach to someone. And you're right. I love what you said. You were very honest about the idea that, yes, you're there, you're hired by the company to protect the company's interests, but not any particular individual in the company. I think that's the biggest part, because you work for X company, there may be a CEO, but the CEOs come and go, the VPs come and go, the employees come and go. So the concept is that the company remains. I mean, like Amazon is Amazon. I mean, Jeff Bezos is a different story here, but the idea is, I'm sure, I mean, anybody in the employment level can have issues, and it happens, where somebody at the top may make serious mistakes. And we've seen, on the news, top guys, getting, blasted, on the media because they've done bad things to their employees, whether
Absolutely.
especially in the harassment, area. And so we have, from governors to I'm not going to go to the president, but that happened too. So there's a lot of that stuff that happens. And again, somebody's got to check these things, these boxes, and making sure that it's happening. But I love what you said about the idea of talent acquisition and retention. Yeah, that's the other thing. Finding someone takes time. And I do have a serious question about that, especially in the idea of AI and recruiting today. Because I think there is a something that's changed. And I want to just spend some time on that. Because there is some feeling that people are now not being selected by humans, they're just disheveled by an algorithm. And so I want to talk about that for a minute. So at least for our audiences, if you're seeking a job or whatever, what would be the best way to actually get in front of somebody and how to maybe avoid the algorithm kicking you out? Listen, I've tried it personally where I submitted resumes and I get the algorithm, selection, yes or no. And when you say yes, the option, now some companies do that. It just behaves differently. So we can talk about that. But the idea of talent acquisition and, the process of bringing someone and maintaining someone, I'll give you something that I've monitored personally as well, is that in some companies, if you look at their reviews and the ratings, like I worked for a company that was one of the top employers, top 40 employers in the state of New York. Okay. And so that's pretty big. I mean, New York State has a lot of companies, and this was a good one. But I've also worked in a company that was rated like a 2-star, and people were upset with that company. And and we as a leader, in the company, I was always fighting that, like, we need to do something about How do we behave with our, folks and employees so we can maintain? We don't want people to give us a 2-star rating. Nobody wants to work for us, and that's the thing. So these things are big for the leadership, specifically in terms of like you want to make sure that you. And I love what you said. There's the finance or the compensation, piece. Developing compensation packages according to the marketplace and competitively. I have to tell you, like there was a time I used to struggle with that because we always fought with HR, about certain compensations because we felt that some of our key competitors, were at this higher level and we were not making up. And by the way, I've seen that also in multiple companies where if you can make, the cut in terms of what that level is, and certainly if you're not providing the same, I guess, benefit services and everything else, or even your products are not as sellable as something some other companies. You're already off. So if you don't give a better compensation, a bigger, benefit package or fringe benefits, you're not going to be even in the in the mark, to get some, you might get, and I hate to say this, you got to get the lower performing, folks that are in the marketplace or the ones that have been already terminated in other places. And, I don't mean terminated for cause. I mean, I'm talking just performance-based stuff. I mean, obviously, if they're terminated for violation of anything, that's a whole different story. But I'm talking about just like people that may not. And that's also like some people can work, in an environment they may not thrive in. You bring them to a different. And I've had this personally where, true story, I've had someone that we worked in the company, they didn't do a good job. And over the process with HR, they were terminated. But I rehired them at a different company and they did super because that company had all the environment for them to thrive and they did a great job. So again, people, thrive in different, environment. And if we understand that, we might be able to assist them. And frankly, I'd rather bring people in and not let them go. And personally, that's how it would be my thing. People come to a company, they want more growth. They want opportunities. They don't
They
want
do.
just to come in and just be used and abused and then go. I mean, they want to come in and see a path, especially if you're just starting a career. And even if you're in the mid of your career, even you're, excelled in your career, you want to be somewhere where people are going to appreciate you, your work. And especially if you have good ethics and you're a good partner, you work with everybody well, you got a good personality. Nobody wants to let you go. Nobody wants to stuff. And so sometimes people may have all the characters. Maybe their performance is affected somehow. And that's, I love what you said about training. Maybe we got to guide some people, and give them a little bit more of how to operate, especially. And I've had a few shows that we discussed the what do you call that? The power trips when someone is newly, elected in their leadership space or like the entry level management. And by the way, guilty as charged. I mean, when I started back in the days, everybody gets that little feel like, oh, I got the power now, but you don't have any power. What you do is your power is your people. And frankly, if you are bad with your people, you're not going to go far further and you're probably going to just be out yourself because, a good team will always win over a bad leader. And that's the bottom line. So, I mean, these are things that you learn and, but I love that you covered these things in your description of all the departments. I love what you said about the idea that things happen. People die in the family. There's bereavements. There's people that get sick. They get married. They get kids. They need time to take care of their babies, and people have to be sensitive to those things. People get upset, but I do have to say, and ask you this question: why does that happen sometimes? In your expertise, why is it happening that sometimes an employee gets the wrong decision done by a manager? There is a reason for that. Now, I want to just hear your idea about that because I do have an idea what happens, but I want to hear yours first.
So, are you asking more specifically about how, like, the wrong management decision, the wrong, like, the hire, the fire? Give me a little bit more context.
So that's perfect. Well, so here's the thing. For example, sometimes someone gets the wrong decision because there are pressures. See, leadership sometimes would unrealistic or over aggressive targets and where people cannot really manage correctly because again I talked about competition and briefly you mentioned that too. You want to compete with other people that are bigger than you in every aspect and so you set the higher standards that are equivalent to those companies but you're nowhere close to them in terms of what you have to offer. So now what happens, you're holding everybody to the higher standard that it's like you take in a professional, athlete, and you have the amateurs and you want them to go to that level and they're not equipped to do that. They're not at that rate yet. But because you put the higher standards, you're going to put a lot of pressure. I mean, so do you
Yes.
find, so the question, do you find that is actually, a true fact, when in some of these companies?
Oh, absolutely. I think it can happen oftentimes, especially as a company is scaling. You have managers that may have not been managers for a long time, or you have an entrepreneur who runs at 1,000 miles an hour. And as an entrepreneur, you can't expect everyone to run at the same speed that you run. No one, your business is your baby. No one is going to love your baby as much as you do. So they're probably like they're caretakers of your baby, but your babysitter is probably not going to jump in front of a moving train for your baby. You are. So to have the expectation that your employees are going to do exactly the same thing, I think is a little bit out of touch, which is one of the reasons why HR can be so beneficial. So there are times where when you've got expectations, especially with a sales team, what is truly a target that they should be hitting? And so let's say you have a sales team of 5 people, you set these really high targets, no one hits that target. Sometimes HR can come in and say, hey, let's look at the objectives of what's happened here and see if maybe the targets that you created are a little bit excessive. Maybe we need to lower them. So there are times where HR can go, I think we need to rethink this because this is a problem. There are also times where HR doesn't necessarily get a say. I mean, as organizations get larger, a good example is some of the larger Fortune 500 and maybe even Fortune 50 companies. You get to that point where there's a rating system and you live and die by that rating system. And so it doesn't matter whether this person's an A or a B, we can only have 4 A's. So we have to pick 4 people, and then everybody else, even if their performance is almost identical, all have to be a lower level. So that's where I think, especially as a company gets bigger, it can become more arbitrary, and that's problematic. I don't think that's helpful for culture. You'll see churn within organizations fairly quickly, or you'll also get the concept of, I mean, you probably heard it of quiet quitting, which is I'm doing my job, but I'm not going to go above and beyond because I'm never going to be recognized for going above and beyond. And that's where I think we can, as business leaders, make better decisions around how to take care of our people. And I think where HR can come in and say, hey, let's look at where we are with employee morale. Asking employees if they're happy at work, asking them if they enjoy what they're doing and how they're doing it can be really important and impactful for why people stay. Because often, Hurricane, we're happy to ask people why they're leaving. We will exit interview everyone, but rarely in HR do we ask people why they stay. And I think that is far more important and especially speaks to an organization's culture and how to take care of the individuals that work for us than to say, oh, well, that person left. Clearly they're not part of our group, but we want to know why. I don't really care. If they're leaving, they're leaving. Bye. I wish you well. I'll like continue to give you a reference that you worked here, but I really want to know why everybody else here is staying. What makes our organization special? What makes you want to get to come to work today and not spend time with your family and not spend time in Netflix and actually show up and do your job? Those are the things that I think are really important and things that we do in HR and we can continue to do even better as we continue to impact the world and like what makes an employee want to stay in an organization.
That is why you refer to yourself as chief cheerleader.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it because I think you've nailed that one greatly, because the idea of, you're right, we all can ask. I mean, everybody gets an exit interview and some people don't even respond to it, but like, why are you leaving? Well, my boss, this, I don't have enough room for growth, this and the other, the typical answers. But you're right, like, why people stay. I mean, I've shared this and everybody knows this little, meme thing that we hear all the time in social media is like, people don't leave, employers, they leave managers, right?
Yeah,
Bad managers.
and
And
they leave bad bosses.
that's really what it is, because they don't have anybody that feels them, that sees them. And I love what you said, the idea that nobody's going to jump in front of your the train for you for to save your baby. You
No,
got to
it's
do it.
you.
But people would do it if you really go beyond the measure. They'll do
Yes.
closer to that. I mean,
Well, they
and I've
won't let
seen,
your baby wander onto the tracks.
there
They'll
you go.
pull
There you go. Yeah, exactly. They put a safety net. There would not even be a chance.
Yes.
But that's really exactly right. And by the way, I've worked in companies that, listen, I've worked in some companies that unfortunately they got sold out and things, but
Happens.
they were some of the best employees. And I have we like we still have groups right now on Facebook with these folks that we shared, quite a lifetime together, and they were family. I used to spend 7 days, in some, early days of my life. with these people almost. I mean, because we work weekends and stuff. I mean, in sales, you always work. So
Yeah.
especially when you're still in the beginning of your career, you're doing a lot of that, right? And it was just a great place to work. And I tell you, the day the culture, and you mentioned the word culture there, changed, where it became less family, more corporate, old, corporate format, it got lost. And I think that's where people started really moving about and finding new homes where they can feel like family. I think that's a big thing. And creating the right culture is a great thing. I mean, today in some of the, I guess, the Silicon Valley, and like you mentioned Google, right? Their environment, work. I mean, it's, listen, there's genius people there that work, but there's all kind of levels of people that work there as well. And I think everybody's genius, because if you can do whatever it is that you're a genius in your own way, and that's okay, because that's a just an attribute that people kind of almost put together with somebody that is like Einstein level, but it's not necessarily the truth, but the fact of the matter is, they figured out the culture where people would really want to work there. They thrive to work there. I mean, you go, you feel like, this is the place I want to be. I mean, I don't know if you've watched, you probably did. I mean, the internship, the movie, that's like a classic, right? When it comes to those things. And you can see like the whole, like, the people that work there. And that's a movie, but it gives you a good idea of how that works, right? And a lot of companies change that. I mean, even before COVID, you mentioned about COVID, right? Prior to COVID, there was almost like an impossible possibility to tell someone, you're going to work remote. I mean, when I used to
Yes.
give people, when I tell, like I had this, I believe it or not, I did this before COVID. I mean, if someone could work, remotely and effectively, as a matter of fact, most of my career was where people are working remote. They didn't have to come to the office. As a matter of fact, I actually made sure that people only showed up to like their quarterlies and stuff, only if we have some bad stuff, that we need to cover immediately. Everything could be done. This was before the Zoom and everything. We were able to
Yeah.
do conference calls and things like that. So you could do it, but a lot of companies were reluctant, talking about your title,
Yes.
to even entertain the idea, because they feel that if people out of sight, out of mind, cats away, the mice play, you're not going to get the same performance. But we were faced with a real thing, and people actually did come out to play, and they did a good job. I mean, companies survived and thrived,
Yes.
as and it happened. Now, people are doing it. It's no big deal. We got adjusted to the concept. So companies that were ahead of the game, they were
Yes.
ahead of the game, and then they maintained that lead, right? And so it's amazing. Now, you personally, you since you mentioned the culture, have there been a shift in culture in the ethics of work and employment in general between before COVID and after COVID, or maybe generation to generation? I think because there's always that debate about the millennials versus and the generals, the Generation Z versus
Yes.
the X and beyond. So
Yes.
because the ethics then were different. We listen. When I grew up, the mentality is like your work. I mean,
Yeah.
you're 7 days. You go in there, you make it happen. And today I talk to my kids. They want easy. They want this and that. And it's a fact. I mean, I'm not saying it because, and I have this challenge with my own kids, right? So let's talk about that. People actually don't even show up to interviews. I've had that. Literally,
Yes.
they don't show up, or the day of their start date, they don't even show up. So
Yes.
what happened?
Oh, well, I feel like that's a lot to unpack, and I am not an anthropologist. But I'll play one on TV for you in this situation. So I would say cross-generational communication has always been a challenge. So we've got baby boomers who are still refusing to leave the organization, and their counterparts, Gen X, are like, "Are you going to die here? Or are you going to exit so I could actually be in charge?" Our poor Gen Xers have kind of gotten stuck in the middle of this sandwich generation of trying to figure out between millennials and baby boomers. So we're continuing to work on cross-generational communication. We communicate very differently, whether we're boomers, we're Gen X, we're millennials, we're Gen Z. And now, I mean, in our house, we have a Gen X, a millennial, a Gen Z, and a Gen Alpha. So it's pretty interesting in how we have communication in our house, because I don't even know that we speak the same language sometimes with the 12-year-old. He's special. But what I will say is that remote work changed on the COVID side, significantly changed how we show up for work and how we expect to be seen. So you've got an interesting dynamic where individuals talk about, I want work-life balance and I don't want to commute. So that we got a little spoiled in some ways for those of us who may have had a really ugly commute before COVID. We got really settled when we didn't have to take the train, the bus, or drive and deal with traffic. And now we're moving back into regular work. You know, Goldman Sachs is mandating everybody's going to come back to the office for at least a day. Starbucks is talking about it in some way, shape, or form. So is Microsoft. So is Amazon. Everybody's starting to talk about coming back. And so now you've got this pushback, especially from Gen Z and a little bit from millennials, in that, you know, I like my work-life balance. I don't like having to show up for work. I don't want to wear pants. Whatever. Whatever you want to do is totally fine with me. But what I will tell you is, if you want to get promoted, you need to be seen. And in order to be seen, in order to be in places where there are gatherings for offices, because there are some organizations that are completely virtual, and that may be a little bit of a different situation. But if you have a physical location, if your office is somewhere nearby to you, and you have the ability to go there, chances are the individuals that are leading your organization are actually showing up in the office for work. So if you want to be seen, if you want the ability to get a promotion, it's really important to take initiative and be seen in an office, in a place where you can have a conversation. Because let's think about it, Hurricane. Where do the big decisions, the big communications, those things happen? Do they happen in a virtual meeting most of the time anymore? No, because those individuals want to sit around a table and have a discussion. And if you just happen to be walking past the meeting room and they're seeing you, being seen is half of getting promoted. It is really important to be at top of mind, because at the end of the day, we're still humans. So that person who's doing an amazing job but is at home, not visible, it doesn't mean that they're hiding, but they're just not in the office. They're less likely to get a promotion right now simply because they're not being visually seen by management. And I mean, there are studies that specifically cite this, that being seen by management helps you get promoted. So if you want to move up in your career, I would say you got to go to the office. You may not like it, and it may only be once in a while, but you've got to show up in person. People have to know that you have legs and feet. It just has to happen.
You know, Chrissy, it's funny because I'm with you 100%. But you know, someone can say, and I'm almost sure if this was my kids, they'd probably say this. Well, Dad, you know, it should be about my performance. I'm doing a great job. I should be promoted because I earned that rank, right? That's really what you would hear. And well, I think the disconnect is what you said. It's one thing to know you. Everybody is on a chart, anyways, right? We all have, but. What makes a difference? You can all have A's, but the one that is going to go A plus is that one that's going to take that extra step and show up. Because if they have to make the decision as manager, they're probably going to have to show up more. And so why will I make someone that refuses to go? And if you're really in that level of leadership, you want to be present, you want to be overseeing things, you want to be involved in meetings and action and community and all stuff. If you're not showing any of that, I guess, extra, you know, activity, or that extra push, or that extra, you know, flavor of what an employee, you know, kind of brings in. It's a highlight, really. You got to highlight yourself from the bunch, right? And so you're right, you know. And by the way, I was in that decision making position when, you know, you look at play and doing more than the rest. And even when I started, that's exactly what made me different from my group. I mean, you know, in some of the early shows, I talked about my history in sales and how, you know, how you succeed and you know, make it happen. You know, I got an opportunity just like everybody else. A friend of mine says, "Hey, there's this company that wants a sales guy that spoke a couple of languages." Happened to be me. I got hired. That was great. But you know why I got hired? Believe it or not, I went. I took a day off from my previous job on my own time, and I spent a full day with that guy. You know, I helped him get his sales. He told the manager, "This dude came in, spent the whole day of his own time on his dime, and he helped me get close these deals." And you know what? I was hired the next week. And then when I got started, you know, literally what happened is that we were 10 people in one clinic. Now, in our world, we used to do presentation in these clinics. 10 of us and all these people were more established than I was. I was the newbie. And so I figured out quick, like, well, I need to be more present in those clinics and do more than these guys. And what I did literally was I spent a little bit more hours, 2 hours in the beginning, 2 hours at night. And before you know it, I was beating them in no numbers. Now, someone can say this, watch the show and say, "Well, you worked more than you should have. You know, you put a lot of hours. The law says 40 hours. You can't work more." See, these are some of the arguments I hear today. Like, people are not willing to put extra time. I'm off the clock. You can't tell me I work 15 minutes. And there's a lot of support of that, even in the, I guess, the low, you know, level, whereby, like, oh, you can't, your employer cannot dictate that you work more. I volunteered those hours because I knew what I was doing. I want it to be different. Now, someone can say, I don't need to do that extra. And I've had people actually who literally, you can't call me at 5 o'clock because I'm not down the, I'm off the clock.
Yes.
Okay. So the simple was, I'm not going to call you at 5 o'clock. I'm not going to call you at 9 o'clock, but I expect you to do everything that I tell you between 9 and 5. Now, you don't have your performance. That's on you. And that's all there is. It was very simple. Now it became very cut dry. There's no more personal relationship. You give me more, I give you more. And that's some people can argue this. That's not the law. Well, in this work, as you said, we're human. You're supposed to be flexible. Someone needs you. You're there for them. And when my team, for example, says, I need this day, take the time. Holidays, take a half a day. No worries. Leave the office. You know, you can work from home. You know, I got to take care of business. Do your thing. And then at the end of the day, you have a monthly, you know, target. You got to do what you got to do. I don't care what you do. As long as you meet your numbers, we're all happy. The company's good. We're good. You're compliant. But that was just my stuff. But not everybody does that. And we have these arguments today. So what do you think of that? I mean, you know, is this something really that we can challenge these days?
Yeah. So I think there's clear rules around, you know, working in overtime. That's fine. So we're not even going to talk about that. But here's what I will tell you. The dirty little secret about being an employee, being a team member, and as it relates to HR, is that whether you like it or not, everyone is in sales. And you are in the business of selling your ability and how you perform on your job to your manager and to leadership so that you can get either promoted, a raise, or both. That's the whole point. So if you are making decisions to be seen, to be visible, to educate yourself, to continue to grow, then you're doing your best to make yourself a better salesperson of yourself and of your skill set. I mean, it's a great example. Something that I think about, Hurricane, is when a business owner's like, I'm just going to work really hard and someone's just going to see my effort, but I'm not going to do any marketing and I'm not going to tell people that I'm selling anything. I'm just going to sit here until somebody notices me. We all know that rarely does that happen. We have to make sure that we are seen. So I appreciate those people who are working remotely, nose to the grindstone, getting all of their work done. But if nobody knows what they're doing, they're never going to be recognized. That's why it's so important that we show up in meetings, that occasionally, even if we are the introvert who hates to say anything, we raise our hand and ask a question, or we make sure that someone knows that we're working on a project, or we volunteer to collaborate with someone else so that we can continue to grow. We have to take responsibility, especially as employees, to make an effort to be seen. It's not just about the work that we do. It's also about getting that acknowledgement for the work that we're doing. That's an important part of being a good team member. And I think that HR can help highlight some of those things. But at the same time, as employees and team members, we have a responsibility to make sure that people realize how awesome we are. That's on us.
Well, you just made my day, by the way, because I think you define something that I've had so much time debating with a lot of people in the companies that I worked for and with, which is, by the way, I always believe that worked for me and with the company, not for the company. That's how I look at it in my life. And that's how I tend to even train people. When you're an employee, you're your own ink, and you work with the company's resources to promote their. So you're their basically partner, and you know you have something to deliver. I make it that easy, but the fact of the matter is what you said about everybody believe it, they whether they like it or not, they're salespeople, and it starts with your interview, right? You're an interview, like you are pitching yourself compared to a bunch of other candidates.
Yes.
You know, so it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, these guys are salespeople. Everybody's selling something at any level in the company, and they don't realize sometimes people they're like, oh, I'm not like you guys. Well, the difference, I'll tell you, like. In 30 years, I promote so many people to different levels, and some of them actually even exceeded my own rank over the you know, in different companies and over time. I even reported someone that I've, you know, promoted. Eventually, I went not, you know, back to the same company, and they were, you know, the higher, you know, entity, and I reported them. But so, and one of the things that I've always looked into is like, you know, showing better, doing better, and they really have leadership skills, basically. Because taking initiative is what makes a difference between someone who's going to be a true leader and takes things, you know, into the next level, or someone who wants just to give me instructions. I'm going to do X, Y, Z, clock out, and that's it. You know, that's what makes a difference. And I love what you said. If you're just doing that, well, that's great. You're doing your job. but I don't see you that you're going to be able to run a division, most stuff. And I love what you said. If someone comes in, well, I'm being passed because maybe they don't like me. But we don't know you to like you. We just know your performance, and there's like five of you that do the same. So how would I make a difference between you and the others? It's not certainly by your performance, because we have that. But I need to see more of you in volunteering in activities, doing different things, stepping up, you, like I always told this, you want to be a manager, you manage people before you even become a manager, meaning that you're already taking, you're taking holding hands, you're taking initiative with the newbies, you're helping them, you're guiding them, you're training them, you're coaching them, you're showing them the ropes. That shows like this person has what it takes. If I put them in that leadership, they'll make more money, they'll be happier, but they can actually now do more of this, and I can use that assistant now. So it changes the dynamics. But again, love what you said. It's just different worlds, and the expectations I've done. And I know, I mean, as you said, today's generation sadly is more on that, like I expect things to get done for me. I just expect the company to see me for who I am. I don't want, to do more, but I want to be like in the highlight. Yeah, I mean, you tell me, I mean, you tell us right now. I don't think
No,
there's a way to do that,
you're
right?
not wrong. But I would push back on some of those individuals and say, look, I mean, you're all in. We love social media. What engages you? Is it the stuff that's boring that's just showing up, or is it something that actually grabs your attention? Visibility is really important, and part of it too is consistency. It's not always someone comes in and right away they're going to get promoted. I think that's something that we forget sometimes too. We talk about attention spans. Like Gen X has a moderate attention span, millennials have a short attention span, and Gen Z has a shorter attention span. And it's not because there's something wrong with anybody. It's just the nature of where we've gotten as a society because of some of the things that we do as we nature and nurture people. So I would say too, it's important to be engaging and understand that visibility is really important. But then also being consistent. It's not just about, well, I'm here to do my job. You absolutely are here to do your job. You're also here if you want to get promoted, you need to be seen. So do something that puts you in a position to either volunteer or you manage or you work for the position that you want. That's the other thing we talk about, right? You show up and you perform based on the position that you want to get. So if you are, we talk about a lot of times in professional dress for the position that you want, not for the position that you have. And I know that there are times that that bothers people, but at the same time, Hurricane, it's human nature. So some of the things that we're dealing with in the business world are not because the system is created this way. It's because we're human. And so we have to be able to kind of manage our humanity and make good decisions around what we are as people. So it's being consistent and it's being willing to show up and volunteer, occasionally doing things outside of your comfort zone, which for some people may be difficult. Now, that said, I will say this, there is a lot of value in people that just want to show up and do their job and go home because we can't all be leaders, and that's totally okay. And I empower and applaud those people. But if there are individuals that are really wanting to move up the corporate ladder, it's really important that we talk about visibility and performance as opposed to those individuals who are like, you know what, I just want to come to work, I want to do my job, and then I want to go home and watch cat videos. That is totally fine. We need those people to continue to run companies because they help the company continue to move forward. They're not always going to be the A-plus players, but companies need B players too. B players help make the world go round. And so that's something else that I think, especially for entrepreneurs or high performers, we can get really frustrated with, like, why doesn't everybody behave like me? Why doesn't everybody want the same things that I want? It's really okay, because if everybody was the same, we'd probably all kill each other.
Well, it's funny. It's interesting because that's the rule of the world, right? I mean, there's only a few leaders in the world. Same thing in the corporate world. I mean, but the only challenge is that when someone has the expectation of getting promoted, yet they want to be in the steady 80 format, that's not going to
No,
work. You see, that's a contradictory,
it
statement
is.
right there. So it's either you're in it or you to win it, right, or not. So if you want to be in the category of leading, then you got to show up for that position. And I practiced this for years. You want to be a director, you're a manager, you start directing before you get the title. You show that you have the capabilities of directing. And there are ways to do that by literally taking challenges, taking, projects, let me have this, I get this and the other, and so on and so forth. And you start, showing that you can handle more in that capacity and you can perform at that level, then you, same thing, you want a VP, you're a director. Well, you start VP and you start already being executive and getting
Yes.
all, you know, creative and, you know, and innovative and in strategy and stuff like that. So all those things are the way to do it. Basically, you step in the bigger shoes before you get into the shoes, and that's how you kind of get in and expand in those shoes and become take your position.
Yes. And don't be afraid to ask. Ask the individuals who are a step above you, how did you get there? Or if they have a responsibility that someday you would like to have, how did you get there? And oftentimes you'll be surprised. The answer is usually, I asked. So ask for what you want.
Yeah, it's funny. That's true. So in the interviews, I have one question I always try to ask people. I ask people, which is, what would you like to be in 5 years? And you know, it's a very standard question, very old school. And here's what I want to hear. And I get it once in a blue moon, and that is, I want to be in your seat.
Ah.
I want to be in your seat. That's what I actually want. I want to hear them wanting to be in my seat. And there's a reason I want that. Because for me, if someone really is that eager to get into this seat, that means they're willing to put the energy, the time, the effort, and the
Yes.
dedication to do what it takes. And we all grow as a company. The company grows. And that's it. I've always had this rule. I don't have to go against my boss to get him out so I can get their room. I want to make my boss the best, you know, leader and get him bigger
Yeah.
and bigger so I can grow and replace his position where he gets better. And I've done that in my career. And that's really, some people have a little mind, you know, unfortunately, where they think that I want to get my boss out so I can get that because there's no room for me. But if you grow the company, there could be 10
No.
VPs in one level, right? So
Yes.
you can make that bigger. You know, you can have regions, you can have different zones, you expand territories,
Yes.
products, lines, and so on and so forth. So you don't have to be small-minded about like, oh, there's only one way. That's now. There's you can build a skyscraper from the ground up, you know, when you're just in a small company. And look, again, I mentioned Amazon earlier.
Yeah.
Where it started, where it is today.
Started in a garage. I mean, let's think about that.
Exactly. But so these are the things. Well, so thank you for at least, you know, connecting with me on those elements, because I think they're great elements for our audiences to just, folks, we don't want to dictate how you do it, but you're talking to an expert, you're listening to an expert that does this for a living and runs different, you know, levels of HR. And you know, these are some of the things. And by the way, someone can say, well, I want to be kiss ass. I'm sorry about my French here, but
Oh, it's totally
yeah, you know,
fine.
no one, that's not being a kiss ass. That just
No.
you're just doing your piece to get better in the action. And you want, by the way, one thing is very clear. You cannot make decisions, you know, if you're in an entry point level. Therefore, you're always going to be subjected to decisions that you may not even like. However, if you earn your rank to be in a table, you get a pot, you know, of that making decisions. So if you don't like things, you can help them change. And actually, that's a simple rule. Listen, I started, folks, just like everybody else in the first rank entry. And you know what? I needed to get to that level where my voice can get heard and, you know, my ideas could be on the table. And I made that happen. And over the years, those ideas actually become an industry standard that are actually being applied today. You know, and I'm proud of that, you know, whether, you know, it's a fact or not, I can prove it. You know, so the fact of the matter is, folks, that's how you got to think. And again, these are just basic elements of you interacting in the world of employment. Now, HR,
Yes.
the health services component, some and the benefits and the fringe and the compensation. Let's just spend a couple of minutes on that to our audiences,
Oh boy.
because those are important pieces. You know, where to go, how to go, you know, how does that all work when they need this stuff? Because some people don't even know how to operate in that realm.
Yeah, so couple of things. So part of it is, you know, when you have employees, you get to the point where in order to attract and retain, you have to have some sort of benefits package. When you're coming in as an employee, it's important you kind of think about, you know, how do I take care of my family? How do I take care of me? What are the basic things that I think every type of employer should have for me? So I would say, you know, for employees or individuals that are looking in the job market, the basic things that you want to make sure a company has for you or can provide for you, there's some things that I would say are basic need level. One is access to some type of health insurance. So, unless you are in a position where you are always qualifying for a subsidy or you're always qualifying for some type of government assistance, it's really important that you have some type of affordable coverage that you can take care of for your family. Because, you know, health insurance is one of the most expensive things that we have, especially as employers next to payroll. So, also an employer that can provide you with health benefits, it's an indication that they are making an investment, not just in you, but in the full of the organization, because usually the second highest cost to an employer outside of payroll is what they pay in their health insurance. So that would be number one. Number two would be some type of retirement package or retirement benefit. So oftentimes, you'll see, especially small employers, they're like, we don't have the ability to kind of pay for a retirement package. So then you kind of have to ask, okay, if I'm looking at a small employer and they don't have insurance or they don't have a retirement package, am I getting paid more than I would be if I were at a large company that would give me those types of benefits? Because often what you see is the benefits can be 20, 30, 40% of an increase over what your net pay is. So it's always important to kind of look at those. And then the other things that I would say are really important are, what is your PTO policy? Do I have the ability to accrue vacation? How can I take vacation? So what does that look like for me as an employee? Do you have, I am always wary of organizations that say they have unlimited PTO, because unlimited PTO usually comes with some strings in that there are certain caveats you have to have in order to take unlimited PTO. So while you may be saying, I'm going to take a 3 week vacation in Europe, they may say, well, you can take that 3 week vacation in Europe, but all of your work has to be done and you have to have hit this amount of gross sales or this amount of work before you're able to do that. So it almost becomes like it's unattainable or unreachable. So that's something that I think is really important. And then, of course, for those individuals, we've talked about it, but it is true, the remote work policy. What is my requirement to be in office versus out of office? And if I've got some of that flexibility, what does it look like from a compensation perspective? So now we're seeing a lot of employers starting to offer, we want you to be in the office, but we'll pay for your parking, or we want you to be in the office, but we'll give you some type of subsidy to be able to work on your commute coming back. So we'll help you transition. But as far as benefits go, the two that I would say you absolutely have to have that are employer paid are some type of health coverage and some type of retirement. And then as far as those ancillary benefits that you always want to make sure you have is, do you have flexibility in your work environment, and what do you do as far as vacations? And does the company encourage? That's always, as an prospective employee, you have the right to ask those questions. What does an average day look like? Tell me what your benefits package is. Those are questions that you can ask, and it's an expectation that someone should be able to answer those for you immediately, or they'll say, you know what, let me get back to you. It'll all be spelled out in your offer letter. So you want to make sure that you've got some type of cafeteria benefit around that.
So one more thing, some people look for tuition reimbursement and education. So that's a big one that I've
Huge.
always looked at, as an opportunity. And we've promoted a lot of that because especially in the field I'm in, a lot of people do nursing degrees and things like that. And tuition reimbursement or get into a master's degree gets them excited about being the opportunity. And a lot of people thrive in a company for 3, 4 years at least, until they get that. And of course, there's caveats. You got to pass a certain
There
grade,
can be. Yep.
And but at least you have the opportunity, and sometimes it's 100% paid. And when you get reimbursed, you get a full reimbursement. You're good. You got free college basically, while you are performing and getting experience that will probably catapult you to the next level. So it's
Absolutely.
pretty
And
cool.
that's a pushback too. Sometimes employers are like, well, what happens if I pay for all of that and they leave? And my pushback to them is, well, what happens if you didn't pay for all of it and they stay? So there's that rub of, investing in an individual's education can be really important. And there are some organizations that, there are caveats around, what type of education you can have. And there are some organizations that go, you can get a 4-year degree in basket weaving. We don't care. We just want to empower you to continue to be educated. And I think that either one is perfectly fine. And I would say too, as an employer looking for an organization with tuition reimbursement, also don't underestimate the ability for them to do additional education where it's not necessarily college or 2-year college. It can also be, are you going to help me pay for my certifications? Especially if you're in the trades, if you're working in space in HR, it's one thing that we do at Clarity is sometimes we will sponsor individuals to get their certifications. And it's not something that we have to do, but it's something that we want to do to help. I mean, it gives us a better employee, a better team member. I'm a huge proponent of education and continued professional development. So if you're a higher level individual, like coming in, not at entry level, or you're thinking about, I want to continue to scope out my career, what are some things that you'll help me do as far as professional development? Can I get into leadership organizations? Will you sponsor my ability to do some additional education that isn't necessarily a college program or a course that's going to give me a certification, but it's building my connections in the community and making me a better better employee and a better citizen at the same time.
Well, thank you. I mean, and those are big things. And frankly, companies that do offer these things, and you're right, it doesn't have to be just education. It could be, sometimes it could be like Amazon, for example, they do CDLs,
Yes.
for the people. They don't have to be their drivers, but they do give them
No.
that program. But a lot of them stick as drivers, so they win. And that's the other thing. I think I love what you said. Like, what's the, if they leave, they leave. But you had 4 years of their employment, right? So you it's not a loss. But you're right.
Exactly.
They you could have lost them day one and not had that performance that you had. So there's it. I always say this. Employment is a marriage, and there is a engagement, there's
Yes.
courting, there is an actual, and there's always a divorce that can happen, right? And that's
True.
okay. It can be mutual, it can be one party,
Well put.
it can be technical, but it's really, if you look at it that way. So you gotta another thing, and I think you'll probably agree to this, is that most people think companies interview employees or candidates. Candidates are interviewing employers, or you at least
They
should be
absolutely
thinking
should.
about it. You're interviewing that partner that's going to be your company. And if you don't jive, you don't vibe well, then that's it. Find something else, because you're not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy with you, and you're going to clash, and it's going to be just a nightmare for HR, and
Yes.
for no reason, and for you, because it doesn't look good, and it just affects everything, and it disrupts your
Yes.
I guess strategy and your flow. So yeah, there's a lot of that. Well, so Chrissy, let's talk a little bit about your Clarity HR, because I love the concept of it being for small and mid-sized businesses, because again, I'm a small business technically, personally, and I know it's always difficult. Now, if you don't have the expertise and you haven't been around HR and you just open a business, you don't know much about HR. You don't even have
No.
contracts, agreements, and things like that. And how to do payroll, all this stuff becomes a little bit like, oh, how do I do all this stuff all of a sudden?
Yes.
And sometimes you have difficult staff, that you can't handle, and how do you handle them? If you say the wrong thing, it could be against you. So I guess Clarity HR does help, navigate
Yes.
these things without having to be a full-time. So how does that work? How's that your format works with companies that are listening? If you're an entrepreneur, you have a business, this could be an opportunity to have an HR that is available to you, in whatever Chris is going to explain to us format.
Yeah, so our program is a fractional model. So you get a set number of hours, either a year, a week, or a month, based on your size and kind of what you need from an HR person. And we have individuals that have generalist level all the way up to a VP of HR level that have law degrees. So it's we're here in your business as much or as little as you need. So sometimes if an employer just has a few employees, they may need an updated handbook. They may need a couple of policy and procedure questions. I want to make sure my PTO policy is correct. We're hiring another person, but that person lives in Georgia and we're based in Tennessee. Like, I want to make sure I'm following the right rules. I'm hiring someone in Colorado and I'm in Utah. Do we all follow the same rules? No, you absolutely don't, because Colorado is not California, is not New York, is not Texas. So you have to make sure that you're following the right things. We'll help with OSHA. So if you're dealing with safety issues, you've got questions around, what is the right way to do this? How do I store chemicals? Do I have the right ladder process? What am I doing to make sure that everybody's certified to use the right equipment? So we'll help you kind of do that safety audit and walk you through before you deal with an OSHA inspector. We'll also coach you in the right way to manage an inspection, because there is a right way to go through an inspection and an audit, and there is a wrong way to go through an inspection and an audit. And the wrong way can be extremely costly to you as a business owner. So, I mean, we're working with organizations that oftentimes run on thin margins. So they're not making tens of millions of dollars. They're making a few hundred thousand to $1 million, and they want to make sure that they're saving enough money to take care of their people and at the same time doing the right things in compliance. So we help you write your manuals, we'll help you write your job descriptions, and then we'll help you with those fun employee relations issues, Hurricane H, that you have, where sometimes they sign the contract with us, we're so excited that you're here, Clarity, then they shut the door and they're like, so this is really what's going on. I have this employee that's been here for 15 years and nobody likes her, but we're all afraid of her and we don't know what to do. And so, can you help me? Like, yes, we can. Tell us what the issue is. Or they have someone who's retiring and they don't know how to replace that person because maybe they bought the business or they transitioned from a family member and that person's been there for 20 years and they've only been there for 5 and they're trying to figure out, I've got to figure out what this person does. I don't know how to create a training program. I don't even know how to hire this type of person because I don't feel like they exist. We'll help you recruit, retain, and find the right person in that space. So, I mean, we do everything from, telling somebody they have to wear shoes in the office, yes, it's happened, to coaching someone in becoming their like becoming a manager. How do I lead people? Kind of creating that training and development program. So that's kind of what Clarity does. We're in your business as much as you need. Some of our companies we talk to 1 hour a month, and then there's some that we talk to 20 hours a week. So kind of we run the business.
You froze there for a minute, but it's okay. So you're on all kind of stuff there. Well, all right. So quick question. W-9 versus W-2. How do we clarify that? Because I think there's a big, some people refer to W-9s as employees, but they're not really.
They're
They're employee
not.
contractors. So we got to be careful. So that, and also, can you define, what is literally small business in terms of your concept versus mid-sized, like how many
Yes.
employees do they have to qualify into one or the other?
Yeah. So the Small Business Administration defines a small business as any organization that has less than 500 employees. I think that's not accurate. To me, a small business has less than 100, and really the ideal client for Clarity has less than 50. So a lot of our clients have between 10 and 40 employees, and they're working on scaling. So that's something that's really important to us is, can we help a business continue to scale? And so we have one organization that we've worked with for several years. They're a nonprofit. They've gone from a $5 million budget to a $13 million budget. And part of that has been we took the HR stuff off of the executive director's plate and enabled him to work on the things that helped the nonprofit grow and expand. But we were helping build the people part in the system. So they've continued to grow and be successful. As far as contract workers versus those W-2 employees, I will tell you that the federal government would really appreciate it if everybody was a W-2 employee because payroll taxes make the government work, and that's okay. But there are some people that don't want to be W-2 employees. We want to be contract workers. We want to be independent. We don't want people to tell us what to do, where to go, all those things. So what I will tell you as a small business owner is if you are dictating how they show up, when they show up, what they do, how they do, how they dress, how they respond, you have W-2 employees. Stop lying to yourself that they're contractors. They're not. So the easiest way to, I don't know, I'm sorry, I probably just made a bunch of people either gasp or swear, and that's okay. We just need to have a conversation about it because I will tell you this, the Department of Labor loves disgruntled contract workers who have been treated like employees. That is a wonderful place for an audit because you now owe back payroll taxes and those individuals are needed to be treated a different way. One of the easiest ways to ensure that your contract workers are truly contract workers is if they have more than one contract that they're working on. And it can't be you and you light. It has to be different individuals. So if they're working in multiple places, they have their own tax ID, they file their taxes separately as a business, taking business expenses. That's one of the easiest ways to ensure that you're not a single contractor employer.
Well, thank you, because I wanted on purpose to address that question, because that's a big question mark for a lot of people,
Yes.
and you're right. W-9 means you're completely independent. You don't they don't you can't have You don't have set work hours. You don't go to an office. Everything is you get your stuff. You're working for your own, basically. And promoting whatever their services or products, and that's all there is. And you said typically you're doing more than just one contract, and that's how you live, and you pay your own taxes. So again, thank you for clarifying that for our people, and whoever's listening now. So if you're an employer, be careful, because if they can determine that you've dictated on an email that they were there from 9 to 5 and you demanded for them to work 40 hours or 30 hours, now you're really telling them that they're employed. And I'm not even the expert here, but
No. And
did I
especially
say it
those
right?
of you in the medical space. If you're in the medical space, you're hiring STNAs, you're doing home health care, and you think all of your people are contract workers, but they are only working for you and they are only showing up for one or two clients, you're wrong. Be careful.
So in the same line, union versus non-union.
Oh, lovely. You're exactly right.
Sorry about that. So, obviously people sometimes they tend to want to be on the union because they feel there's a protection.
Yes.
And I'm going to give you a quick example. There's years back, I was in a capacity of a director in a company, and we had one of the largest unions trying to, because we were owned by a hospital system and the hospital had union, contracts. And so they wanted to basically have a union, of our sales force.
Yes.
And we fought them and won. And the reason we did it because everything we were doing was in the same lines of what the union would have done without the delegation, without the mitigation, without representation, without union fees. And we were able easily to prove to our employee. And they actually kind of like, challenged the union narrative, and they never won union because they didn't feel that we were treating them any different where they needed a union to support them. Now, again, I'm not against union. Some jobs do need to have the union because they don't have anyone to really advocate for them the same way. But some jobs will have pure HR and, good, management leadership, that cares and values their, remember when I talked about family? We were a
Yes.
family. So we treated everybody right and we won that battle. But sometimes that doesn't always, be the case. And some companies will actually eventually lose their employees to a union force. By the way, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it means now you have to deal with the union process, which could be a little bit more convoluted. Understanding how to mitigate that, with the help of HR, usually can be great. So, but now you deal with that as well. Hope, I'm assuming,
We
and you have those
do.
cases.
Yeah, so we'll deal with union and we'll deal with non-union. We do have some organizations that have a combination of both employees, so that can be a little bit of a challenge. And there's some nuance there. Part of what we have to do in Clarity is educate oftentimes the business owner or the CEO, the executive manager, as to what can and can't happen as a result of the union. I mean, we're not there to bust the union. We're also not there to just set to fight with the union. I mean, we're really there to be a collaborative partner and make sure that we are following the union guidelines and at the same time that the union is following the guidelines for the business. So in a lot of ways, HR, when it deals with the union versus non-union, we're an intermediary in communication. And sometimes we also have to have those awkward conversations with managers that say, hey, you're in the union. You have to act like you're in the union, which means you have to show up by the same guidelines that everyone else in the union has to show up by. So in some ways, we can also be that enforcement arm and ensure that, these are the guidelines and the regulations and the code that we have within the union. So we need to make sure that you're following them. So it can be a really interesting space, especially when you're dealing with those union employees. But I think that in a lot of respects, there are times that the union is really there to protect the worker. It's not always there to protect the business, and that's okay because it's there so that both can work together. So it's really about, building the right type of relationship and having the right communication as far as where the union needs to be and where HR needs to be in between the union and management.
Oftentimes, it's really more about those bargain agreements and making sure that the people get the right comp and stuff. So, again, if
Absolutely.
you have a good HR that actually can provide all that and the compensation is competitive and stuff, and you know that your rights are going to be as an employee always protected, there's a good chance that you might not even entertain being in the union. Because I've seen even with union, performance is still performance. You just, have the same process one way or the other. If you're not doing a good job, an employer can still, terminate employment based on performance,
Absolutely.
So again, there's people have to, if you're out there, you got to think about what worked for you as an employer, an entrepreneur, a business owner. And if you're an employee, you got to see like which option depends on what type of job do you do. And because as you said, OSHA and things like that can make a difference.
Exactly.
Yeah, some of these jobs do require union opportunities because they get a little bit more action and protection.
Yes. Well, and oftentimes it's not even about, I need to fear this because it's different. It's just another level of communication. I mean, having a good relationship with the union rep as the HR individual is what it can make or break a company. So it's just, again, it's being willing to ask questions and just being willing to be personable. We don't need to look at everybody as an adversary, especially when we're dealing with union versus non-union. It's just another level of the human experience, and we just need to communicate.
All right, well, so I know we've exceeded the hour, but there's still the question about your book right now.
Sure.
So reluctantly resilient. So
Yes.
you mentioned that there's 13 items in there, that are literally almost the guides or the commands to like how to properly operate. Would you kindly just share with us a couple of things, and definitely where people can actually get the book and how they can even connect with you as companies that may need some assistance in HR. Now, I'm assuming, as you said, you could do 1 hour a week, 1 hour a month, but and they pay for the services as as they go, or on a retainer concept. But it's really a great concept. I know there's some apps that do some things like this, or online
There
things.
are, but we're actually real people. Real people
Hi, listen.
with real HR experience.
Human factor is always a better thing. And now we will circle back quickly to the AI piece, but yeah, let's talk about your book quickly and some of the
Sure. Let's
pointers.
talk for a minute. So, I mean, you can connect with me at clarityhr.com, and reluctantlyresilientthebook.com is another great place. So the book is available on Amazon, also through Audible, because when I published the book, I had a lot of people that said, I'm never going to read your book because I don't read anymore. I only listen. So I suffered through recording my book for 3 hours and like 22 minutes. You can listen to it. So if you got a long car ride, a little commute, you can kind of go through that. So the book in itself, so I went through a personal hurricane and a professional hurricane at the same time. So I know that's your name, but or tsunami. Maybe we can say it's tsunami, personal tsunami, professional tsunami. In that, in 2013, I lost my husband, my first love, my high school sweetheart, the father of my two children to suicide. And then less than a month later, I had to transition our 40-year-old family business through the Affordable Care Act. So I went from wife to widow, from shared parent to single mom in the blink of an eye. And then I had to stand up and turn around and help our business go through a major transition where our revenue was cut in half overnight, and we had to learn how to do something completely different and that we'd never done before. And so I am not resilient because I want to be. That's why I say I'm reluctantly resilient, because I had to be. And so the book talks about, the transition and, building a family, losing, loving again, but then also talking about transitioning a family business and the things that you need to be a resilient person or resilient business owner. And the three primary things I talk about Hurricane H are having a growth mindset, building your interpersonal effectiveness skills, which is a great concept that comes from, dialectical behavioral therapy. So learning how to get your needs met, communicating in an effective manner without, not being devoid of emotion, but being able to negotiate effectively and ask for what you want and validate other people's feelings so that you can continue to just be a better human. And then the third thing is about adding philanthropy into your business. So finding a what else that drives you beyond people, beyond money. It's that purpose. And so for me, it's inspiring individuals to build resilience within themselves, because when we build resilience as business owners and even as HR people, we affect change with the employees that we touch. And as a result, they affect change in their families, and we change the world and make it a better place. So that's a little bit into what Reluctantly Resilient is about. I tell some really fun stories about, how it's important to take care of yourself while you're continuing to walk through life's journey. Paying attention to yourself so you don't burn your house down at Christmas time is really important. I have a fun story about how I almost did that. I barbecued my house because I was trying to be superwoman. So talking about, taking care of yourself, taking care of your family, taking care of your business, and kind of the ups and downs that happen as we go through life. So I went from being reluctantly resilient to now I would say I am consciously courageous. And so continuing to move through, grow my businesses, enjoy the family that I have. I now have Team Awesome Sauce. So when you have four different people with three last names, a mom who builds businesses and a dad who played team sports, you get a name, Team Awesome Sauce, t-shirts, a code of conduct, and all of the fun things that come with it. Our purpose statement is we radiate awesome to the world. Our motto is put more awesome in the sauce. So if you want to learn about family business philanthropy too, it's another chapter in the book of Reluctantly Resilient.
Well, first of all, congratulations on that. I
Thank
know
you.
despite all the hardship and the hurricanes and the actual tsunamis you managed, and you certainly have succeeded, and you're doing great, and it's a great concept that you have in place, in terms of the work. And I know you're doing all the community work as well. And so if you don't mind, can you share with audiences what some of that is, just so we can get them a little bit of excitement?
Yeah, to give you a little bit of excitement. So AUI, Associated Underwriters Insurance, our family business turned 50 this year. And in order to celebrate that, we did 50 acts of service to commemorate Some of those were little things. You know, we walked in a walk for a hospice center. We raised money for the Alzheimer's Association, but then we do some other initiatives. We do a safe drug disposal program. We're a partner with our county mental health board and drug board, and so we provide disposal pouches for medications for seniors that are biodegradable, so they can kind of put their drugs in, put some water in, shake it up, throw it away, and then it's safe in the community, no longer in a landfill, causing problems, leaching into the water system. It's all neutral. So we do that. We also work with the All American Soapbox Derby, so empowering kids to learn in STEM education, build their soapbox cars, and gravity race down hills. So we work in supporting that. And then we think about a couple of other ones that I really love. We did some support for animal welfare this year. We have a pet recovery organization that we've worked with. We work with several mental health organizations across the community as well. We've supported different schools and different nonprofits. We collected bicycles for one of our local nonprofits that does a bike drive for different kids in the community. We helped bag lunches for the Good Samaritan Hunger Center. So, I mean, just continuing to create ripples within our community. And what I will say too is, as a business owner and a business professional, your treasure is important, but your talent and your time is so much more important and valuable to small nonprofits. Your ability to serve as a leader on a board of directors, to be an advisory individual for those organizations that may need your expertise, can be so impactful and important. So I would encourage you, if you're thinking about how can I get involved, be willing to raise your hand and say, hey, do you need any board members? Do you need anybody to help you with fundraising, or if you're good in sales and you're good in marketing, there are a lot of organizations that need help in community engagement, and they don't have the money to pay you, but the connections that you build in the community will be invaluable to you as you continue to grow in your career.
Awesome tip, awesome sauce.
Thank you.
But that's a great one. I mean, I had a show about just how philanthropy in a business can be,
Yes.
like you want to have an arm of philanthropy
You
in your
do.
business as leader, because you can build a little bit more, and that is a big deal. And certainly, I personally have to do a little bit more of that, and I know that, I haven't started doing a lot of that, just too many things going on, but certainly it isn't to do. And I did actually some of that work when I was in the corporate space, and being some of the early Head Start, for example, board,
Yes.
and some community board. And so it is important. You give, some time. Sometimes, it's very difficult and you do it, but the more we do, the more we can provide some assistance. And as you said, you also give great networking opportunities to your business, and also some
Yes.
good name to your stuff that you can actually push out there. Do it with the right intention. Things will work for you. So I want to go quickly back to the AI, because I know that that's becoming, the algorithm piece is becoming a
Yes.
challenge to recruiting today. Now, again,
Yeah.
recruiting can be good and bad, depends on who. And not all recruiters are made equal. And I've worked with some of the greatest and not so great. Some, they just recruit, they look at Indeed resumes, and they just, okay, yes, no, maybe. And then they do the basic, and some really go beyond. They understand the positions that
Yes.
are, posted. I mean, we started actually the job market channel as an opportunity to kind of almost bring job descriptions to the surface, to life. I mean, you don't have to just read them and see them.
Yes.
We basically promote the job for you in real talk. Like, this is what the job looks like. This is what, your expectations are. And so basically someone will actually narrate the job. So that's kind of like the concept. So the channel does a
Yes.
lot more about all the tips and stuff. The show is one of them. But really, those are the concept. But recruiting has become difficult. Many people are complaining about not getting seen,
Yes.
because the algorithm pushes them out because there's keywords that are missing or whatever. And sometimes people are questioning the resume concept, although the resumes are the resumes, right?
Yes.
A best resume to me in an interview is not the paper. I don't even look at the paper. I want people to tell me who they really are. But a
Yes.
resume gives you a filter. At least back in the days, that's how it was. Now with the AI, how does that work? Is that really the future? Is it really impacting the talent acquisition, the proper talent acquisition? What do you say to that, based on your experience? I mean, today.
So there's a lot to unpack there. So first is what I would say is, if you are really looking for a position, it's important to work to connect with the individuals who could potentially put you in that position. So as much as we like to say at the large corporate level, yes, there's a lot of fishing through the resume and you've got to get through the algorithm. But part of also getting through the algorithm is ensuring that someone knows that you're applying for the position so they can look and see, did they meet the criterion? Did they get kicked out by our criterion? What do we need to do? So I would say never underestimate the power of relationship as you're even trying to get a position where AI may be involved. As far as some of the things that we do in HR and in the ability and wanting to be efficient, Hurricane H, there are times where HR people create problems for themselves. And I would say this is one of the things that HR people can really create an issue with is that we may be eliminating good candidates because of some of the things that we're doing on the AI side. So while it can be helpful in screening as a tool, there are also times, and this has been an issue for over a decade. We have been using computer screening software for individuals coming into positions for probably the last 20 years. So when you realize that you don't have a lot of good candidates on the HR side, oftentimes you go, you know, is our screening criterion too big? Is it too wide where it's eliminating everybody? So I think that's something that you really need to think about too, if you're an HR person, is, you know, what am I doing and am I eliminating my pool? The other part is that, you know, if you build the relationships, if you're able to get a personal introduction of, hey, I'd like to send you my resume. You can also do the coaching side of, hey, what do I need to do to get an interview? What is the best way for me? And sometimes people will just be like flippant and they'll say, well, you just need to fill out the application. Well, you know I'm qualified for the position, but I'm not getting an interview. What are some things that you could tell me to make sure that I do? And then as an individual, there are some things that you can do on the AI side. If you want to talk to ChatGPT, act as a recruiter for X company. Tell me what I need to say. Like, don't be afraid to try to game the system too on the AI side, you know, because it's getting fed a lot of things when it comes to like what individuals want as far as recruiting, but we should be feeding it too as to what we want to be, how we want to be seen. So don't be afraid to use it against itself. I will say that's definitely a tip that I have started giving some individuals as they're looking for positions. But I would say the number one thing is still human connection. It's really about who you know and how you know them and getting that introduction. Because even I will say as an HR person, it can go through the screening criterion, but if somebody says, hey, I've worked with this individual, I know this individual personally, I think they could be a great fit, I am probably going to screen that candidate and potentially give them an interview, even if they don't always hit through my criterion and my software.
Well, thank you, because I mean that's a big thing, and you know what, you're right. I mean, it's all about the old saying, right? It's who you know, not what you know, right? But
Yes.
you know, to a degree, it works, and it's still, I guess, plausible and real, and we still have to apply that. But I love what you said, the idea of reaching out, maybe, and finding out what who do you speak to? Because I mean, sometimes you got to reach out, and because if you think you really can do a good job for a company, maybe
Yes.
that's what you should be doing. And but it is a whole adjustment, to everybody. That's not how it used to be. Now you
It's
almost
not.
have to do, and you have the option. A lot of companies nowadays, do you opt out of the, I guess, the electronic selection, whatever. I forgot what that says, but you got to select it, and then therefore you're not, chosen by the algorithm, and it goes to somebody to see it. And you're right, it's been in place, before even the AI. You had these softwares that kind of filter things based on,
You did.
the job description and things like that, and your resume kind of matches or not. So there's some things. I mean, we use Dayforce, and it has a lot of good features, for example, that does that. And you have the and what I hate, what I love and hate is those automatic responses. You click
Thank you
this
for
and
your submission. We have, no, you are not qualified, blah, blah, blah. Yes. And it's so frustrating. But here's what I would say too, for those individuals that may be discouraged because they keep getting that rejection, is that unless there's an organization that you are desperate to be in, if they are going to treat you like that in their screening software, I ask you, what are they going to treat you like when you are a team member? So you need to remember that you need
love
to
it.
be just as choosy as you're going through, like exactly what you said. You need to be interviewing the company just like they're interviewing you. It is a two-way street, and how they treat you as they onboard you or how they treat you through the interview process is telling as to how they will treat you as an employee. If you have to jump through a million hoops to get that first interview, expect to have to jump through the same hoops to be able to get your first promotion. And that's okay. Like, just know that's what potentially the expectation is. And I appreciate people who are very choosy in that slow to hire phase, But there are times that we as HR people shoot ourselves in the foot because we are too slow to make a decision and too slow to get people in the door.
Well, just a thing that I've used with working with my partners at HR is that, like, I've made the job descriptions, flexible enough to give a larger scale for the people,
Yes.
because I know there's people out there that probably have better skills and stuff in the jobs that we're looking for than the standard, what you would want in somebody.
Yes.
And so I opened that up, for many job descriptions, like preferred versus like mandatory or need must have this. Those are things. So some, whether it's education or experience, I use some of those flexibilities. For example, education sometimes depends on the job you're looking for. Does it
Yes.
have to be a certain exact, grad, degree, or you want someone who's got what it takes to make it happen? So
Exactly.
there's certain things that if you make it flexible enough, then you'll get better talent. And certainly if you're looking, at everyone personally as the hire manager, if you want to call it, I used to look at all resumes. Let me see them, and then we filter out. We sat down with HR, we go over the resumes, as a screening algorithm, and we have a criteria, but we look, well, this one has, 90%, 80%, pool one, pool two, and then we interview everybody. And you'd be surprised that it could be on an 80% pool and they still be make the cut eventually because they did have the right presence. Now, of course, in an interview, people sometimes tend to oversell themselves, and they can do
Yeah.
a good job. Some are great salespeople. They can pitch you a good, game, and I can do this, and you put them into play. And that's where I talked about courting and engagement. I always said this: we gotta have an engagement, introductory phase. Let's see how it
Yes.
plays. If it works out, we're
Yes.
great. If it doesn't, no harm feelings, hurt feelings here. It's all good, and we part our ways. And it's an expectation that gets set, along with HR upfront, and no problems there. So there's a lot of ways. Well, thank you for clarifying the
Oh,
algorithm and the
absolutely.
AI piece. It is part of the future. We gotta adjust to it. I know there's
We
a lot of
do.
tweaking, a lot of tweaking on both sides. And I think people will, as you said, use a AI versus AI kind of concept as opposed to human versus AI, because I think we can lose that battle because AI is just what it is.
It
So
is.
unless you use its own way of thinking, you might not win that battle.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, Chrissy, we have covered quite a lot of grounds. Thank you so much for really being with
Absolutely.
us, and it's been real. Just before we part, my tradition is anything you want to say to our audiences before we close the show.
Well, I appreciate the time that you gave me, Hurricane H, to kind of share about, all the different things in HR. We talked about HR, we talked about benefits, we talked about how to be reluctantly resilient. I mean, I would just encourage your audience. I would love to connect with them, whether it's on LinkedIn, Chrissy Meyer CEO, or Instagram, same thing, Chrissy Meyer CEO. And I would love a listen and love a like, and kind of just to continue to connect and have a good conversation.
There you have it, folks. And you know what? Hey, you have an opportunity to learn a little bit about HR. That's definitely somewhere to go. If you have a business and you have an HR, requirement, you don't know anybody to go to, we have someone that we can go to now. So there you have it, folks. I'm Hurricane H. I hope you enjoyed our show today. We'll be talking soon with a new show and topic. For now.